Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of True Crime Cases. I am your host, Allison Mendes, and today I am going to be updating you all on the Suzanne Morphew case. Suzanne's case was the very first episode that I ever did, and since then I have done one update episode, and now I am back for part three. If you don't know about this case, I would suggest going back to my previous episodes and getting caught up before listening to this one. Now, as a refresher, Suzanne went missing on Mother's Day of 2020. Her body has yet to be found, but her husband, Barry Morphew, is currently being charged with her murder. Now, since our last update, Barry has had another three court dates, I believe. And of course, the biggest news is that the 131-page arrest affidavit for Barry was finally released. That was previously ordered to be sealed by the judge. So that is big news, and that has a ton of information in it. So let's dive right into this. Okay, so in the last update, I covered the first 2 days of the preliminary hearings for Barry, and I said I would come back to do another update when he had his last 2 days of preliminary hearings, which were at the end of August, and I decided to wait because the judge did decide to wait until September to decide whether or not Barry should stand trial for the murder of Suzanne, and if enough evidence had been presented for this. And of course, for this arrest affidavit that everyone who is following this case has been waiting to see. So on September 17th, the judge ruled that Barry will be standing trial, and they will be moving forward with that, which is great news. The judge did lower Barry's bail to $500,000 cash only, which Barry posted the following Monday. So Barry is currently out on bail. And Barry also, I believe, waived his right to a speedy trial. Now, the judge said when he made his decision, quote, "This is not a trial. It does not serve as a mini trial, only to see if there is probable cause that there was a murder and that the defendant might have caused that. We have to entertain a reasonable belief that the defendant may have caused this. The court must draw all reasonable inferences in favor of the people. Evidence to support a conviction is not necessary at this stage," end quote. And as of right now, the trial is set to begin in May of 2022, and I read that it is expected to last 4 weeks. So now let's talk about the arrest affidavit. Just like we all suspected, there was a ton of information that had not been made public previously. We knew that law enforcement had to have something because of the fact that they were charging Barry with murder in the first degree, as well as tampering with physical evidence, and they were confident enough to do this without a body. And we were right. So the first thing addressed on this affidavit is the fact that Suzanne had taken clear steps in January of 2020 to separate and divorce Barry. It said that she had told her family and close friends of her intentions, that she was secretly logging abuse in her phone, which we'll get into, secretly because Barry obviously was monitoring her phone. It also noted that she secretly recorded him in arguments with the help of a friend, and that 4 days before she went missing, she sent him a text saying, quote, "Done, let's handle this civilly," end quote. It noted that Barry, however, had misrepresented his marriage with Suzanne as, quote, "perfect" to the investigators from the CBI, FBI, and the CCSO, and that Barry had said Suzanne had no intentions of leaving him or ending the marriage. There was none of that talk. We also saw that Barry had given statements to law enforcement about his actions in the days leading up to Suzanne's disappearance that had been proven to be false. And noted was the manner in which Suzanne's bike and helmet were found, not far from the Morphew home. They said they believed Barry had actually planted this before leaving town on May 10th, and that when the bike and helmet were recovered, they were not indicative of an accident, an animal attack, Suzanne being a runaway, Suzanne being suicidal, or of Suzanne being a victim of stranger abduction. So it noted that as of April 30th of this year, there are no records of Suzanne using or accessing any of her bank accounts or using any of her credit cards. She has not used her social security number. She has not flown on an airplane. She has not come in contact with law enforcement at any point for any reason. She has not rented housing or established utilities anywhere. So basically, she has not done any of the things a runaway would still need to do. And she has not done those things in over 335 days. And that, from what I can tell, is what they are using to prove lack of proof of life, therefore pronouncing Suzanne as deceased. Next, the affidavit goes over Suzanne's relationship with Jeff, which they say began about a month after the family had relocated from Indiana to Colorado in April of 2018. It says that Sheila Oliver, Suzanne's longtime, very close friend, actually witnessed Barry stalking Suzanne at their own residence in Salida, Colorado. In January of 2019, Barry reportedly took Suzanne's phone from her while they were on vacation in Mexico at a resort, and that Suzanne had been talking on the phone to Jeff, but that Barry was unable to figure out Jeff's identity. So he could see messages or something like that of some sort, but there was no way for him to identify who she had been talking to. On May 8th of 2020, Suzanne had a note saved to her phone that said that Barry accused her of having a boyfriend on May 6th. And like I mentioned in the last episode, Suzanne's last proof of life was at 2 p.m. on May 9th of 2020 when she sent a selfie to Jeff while sunbathing on her deck outside of her home. And this is at the same time that Barry was returning to the home, according to the information taken from the computer system in his truck. Suzanne did not respond to any messages at 2:44 p.m. and 2:46 p.m., and that's the same time that Barry had admitted to running around their property with a gun and placing his phone into airplane mode at 2:47 p.m. Now, the telematics from Barry's Ford F-350 and the activity of his cell phone combined with statements that he made to law enforcement confirms that from 2:47 p.m. on May 9th until 5:37 a.m. on May 10th of 2020, Barry took steps to dispose of evidence of Suzanne's disappearance and death, create a false alibi for himself, and stage a crime scene. In the month since Suzanne's disappearance and since new evidence had come to light and the FBI had actually presented Barry with this evidence, Barry reportedly changed critical details about his activities in the 2 p.m. hour on May 9th in attempts to sort of match the evidence that was now being presented to him. Since 2021, Barry has admitted to the following. One, chasing the chipmunk with a gun around the house while Suzanne was outside sunbathing. Two, shooting a deer with a tranquilizer dart to explain a dart or needle cap in the dryer. Three, disposing of the tranquilizer solution during his trip to Broomfield. Four, following a bull elk down Highway 40 at 4 a.m. on the morning of May 10th to explain why his truck would be headed west. Remember that that's the direction that Suzanne's helmet was actually found. And finally, number five, stating to the FBI on April 22nd of 2021 that he looks guilty from the evidence and God allowed these things to happen. And the affidavit goes on to say that Barry's involvement in Suzanne's disappearance and death can be organized into, I believe, six sections. So section one is initial scene and interviews. Section two is Suzanne's affair and her attempts to leave him. Section three is Barry's early statements to the CBI from May through June of 2020. Section 4 is the evidence recovered by law enforcement. Section 5 is witness statements. And Section 6 is Barry's statements to the FBI in 2020, where he describes what happened to Suzanne when he is shown evidence in the case. So I'm going to break down each one of these sections for you guys. I did my best to summarize them with what information I thought was the most important that you should hear. I will obviously link this arrest affidavit in the show notes so that you guys can read it yourself. I will tell you right now that this is going to be a multi-part coverage. So we're going to get through about sections 1 through 3 in this episode, and then I'm going to pick up on the rest of section 3 next week, and then we'll finish up the arrest affidavit from there because it is over 131 pages. It's just so much information, and I want to be able to get it all out to you guys and not leave anything important out. So let's get into section 1. On May 10th at 5:58 p.m., Suzanne was reported missing. At the same time, the deputy taking the call was informed that her husband, Barry, was driving back from Denver and did not have cell service. When in fact, at this point, Barry was actually at the hotel in Broomfield and did have cell service. So one of Suzanne's daughters actually had called a neighbor, which we know because she couldn't get a hold of her mom, and she herself was out of town with her other sister. The neighbor sent his wife over to the Morphew home, and when the wife couldn't locate Suzanne, they reached out to Barry via phone call, and that's when Barry told them that he also had not been able to reach Suzanne that day. The neighbor told Barry that Suzanne wasn't in the home nor the immediate area because he had checked around outside the house. Barry then told the neighbor to call 911 and told the neighbor he was on his way home from Denver. Now, when the neighbor called 911 and spoke with Deputy Brown, he estimated that Suzanne had gone missing between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m. that same morning. Deputy Brown then attempted to call Barry at 6:05 p.m. and got no answer. He then called Barry again at 7:10 p.m. and this time Barry picked up. On this call, Barry stated that the last time he had seen Suzanne was at their home at 5 a.m. that morning when he was getting ready to leave for a job that he had in the Denver area. He said that Suzanne was still asleep at this point and he did not speak with her. Barry then told Deputy Brown that Suzanne had recently taken an interest in mountain biking which she had been doing daily, and that when she went on her bike rides, she wore a turquoise helmet and a windbreaker, and that she would always take her iPhone with her. He then informed Deputy Brown that Suzanne was going through cancer treatments and gave the deputy Suzanne's cell phone number. Now, at this point, Deputy Brown and CCSO Sergeant Lamine Mullinex, I hope I'm saying that right, drove out to the Morphew home and turned onto County Road 225 from US Highway 50 at about 7:31 p.m. Now, once they got on this road, they drove really slowly. They were trying to keep their eyes open for anything along the shoulder of the road, which had a steep incline and decline on each side. As they turned the corner, Deputy Brown saw a blue mountain bike down near the ravine, close to the bottom of the hill, with the front tire pointed upwards or downwards toward the creek. When both officers headed down to investigate the area, Deputy Brown noted, quote, "The vegetation around the bike was not flattened in the area where a human body would have landed," end quote. There was also no blood around the bike, and the bike had no apparent damage to it. Due to the steepness of the hill, the bike should have been damaged if an accident had actually occurred. And when Deputy Brown moved the bike back up the hill, he noted that the front brake pad was seized and the handlebars were turned completely to the left, causing the brake cables to wrap around the bike frame. And when the officers got back up to the road, they examined the dirt shoulder of County Road 225, which was the area immediately above where the bike was recovered from, and neither of them observed any like braking marks or skid marks from the bicycle, which was unusual and should have been there if it was an accident, like it was kind of appearing to be. Now, Deputy Brown wrote in his report, quote, "After all of these observations, I started to question if something criminal had occurred, as it looked like the bike was purposefully thrown in the location," end quote. All of these observations being the lack of damage to the bike and the condition of the area where it was found. So at this point, law enforcement searches the home and they find no evidence of forced entry and note that the house is tidy and well kept. They do note that one bedroom had the bedding stripped. Whose bedroom it was is redacted because it's one of the daughter's bedrooms. And I believe it's the daughter who no longer lived in the home because she was in college. So they noted that as being strange. Now at 8:42 p.m., Barry arrives on the scene in his truck and he's by himself. He walks up, the deputies noted this. He walks up and touches the bicycle and identifies it as Suzanne's bike. The officers also noted that Barry said Suzanne usually went for her bike rides between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m. when actually, according to Suzanne's Instagram posts and her pattern of life statements from Melinda, her sister, Suzanne actually routinely rode in the afternoons. So when law enforcement spoke with one of the daughters, she confirmed that her bedding was always made and she gave a description of her bedding. So I'm assuming this is the daughter whose bedding had been stripped. And she also said that her mom wrote daily religious devotions in a journal. When law enforcement spoke with the second daughter on May 11th of 2020, she admitted that her parents actually argued a lot and that she was afraid that they were going to separate or get a divorce. She said that they were both, quote, not doing well, and that it was for the best if they were to separate, and that both Barry and Suzanne were in a, quote, unsafe place, end quote, emotionally. She referred to her parents as different people and that both of them, being Suzanne and Barry, had felt unsafe at one point or another. When asked if Suzanne had possibly left because she felt unsafe, the daughter said that no, like my mom would never leave me. And if for any reason she decided that she did want to run away, she would have contacted either her or her sister to let them know that at least she was okay. Now, when Barry was interviewed on May 10th of 2020, he told law enforcement that he had seen Suzanne that morning around 5 a.m., like we already went over. He had a job in the Denver area and they didn't talk because she was still asleep. Barry stated that both daughters were set to return home on May 10th from a camping trip. And he also said he texted Suzanne to say Happy Mother's Day and she did not respond. And that maybe that was due to the lack of cell service at their house. Barry said that he tried to text her again later that morning, again with no response. And then he texted his daughters, who told him that she had not replied to their texts either. Barry then specifically went through his route to Broomfield, Colorado, which is the Denver area that we've been referring to. Broomfield is in that Denver vicinity. And not once did he mention that he turned west on Highway 50. Barry then explained Suzanne's plan for the day on May 10th, which, let me just remind everyone, was Mother's Day. And apparently no one's spending this day with her. That she was going to clean the house and get ready for their daughters to return from their trip, possibly with a friend also returning to stay over. He added that Suzanne had been diagnosed with cancer twice and had beat it both times. Barry told law enforcement that he did in fact own firearms, but that all the firearms and ammunition are stored in a locked gun safe in the garage. Although I want to mention that when law enforcement searched the Morphew home on May 11th of 2020, two guns were found and were not in a gun safe. There was a rifle in a closet on the ground floor, and there was a 12-gauge shotgun, which was found leaning against the wall in the garage. Now, law enforcement did search the Morphew home on May 11th as well, and while they were searching the exterior of the home, they did note a bobcat skid steer parked in a parking area west of the Morphew home with a flatbed trailer next to it. Law enforcement noted that the skid steer's cutting edge bucket had been recently replaced because there was no wear on it. It was also noted several larger bolts and nuts were lying in the skid steer bucket and on the front end of the trailer bed. I don't know if that's going to come back as significant, but I know that the canines end up hitting on some large piece of machinery. I'm not there yet, but so I wanted to mention that just in case. Now, on May 13th of 2020, search teams located what they believed to be the bicycle helmet Suzanne would have been wearing. And this item was located approximately 0.84 miles northwest of the site where the bicycle had been found, which was approximately 10 meters south of Highway 50 and about 1.52 miles from the Morphew home. On May 19th of 2020, law enforcement found the cap of the tranquilizer dart that we've been hearing so much about. Quote, a plastic needle cover was located in the dryer drum. This was collected by the CCSO along with additional items and swabs from different areas, end quote. The needle cover was recovered with sheets from redacted's bed inside the dryer. So that for me made the bedding very suspicious. I know I mentioned the bedding being stripped before and I said I didn't really think anything of it because I knew the girls had slept there before leaving for their trip and now they're returning and it's a normal mom thing to do to wash the sheets when someone's coming back. But I do find the tranquilizer cap being in with the laundry, that's not normal to me and that's a little bit odd. So hopefully we get further into that. And now we get into section two, which is going to dive into Suzanne's attempts to leave Barry, and it also details her affair a little bit further. So according to the arrest affidavit, Suzanne had told several close friends, her daughters, and even Barry that she wanted out of the marriage. And Barry reportedly just kind of refused to listen to her, like just never took it seriously. She reportedly suspected Barry of having affairs for several years, and I have not seen anywhere that they have found proof that Barry was having an affair. I have seen some rumors floating around about a girlfriend right now, which we'll get into next week, but I have not seen anything that suggests she found proof that Barry was actually having any of these affairs. I just want to put that in there to be fair. And I know she kept her own affair very secretive, and a lot of people say to protect her daughters, as well as the family of Jeff, who is the man with whom she was having the affair, because he was also married. I don't know the current status of his marriage, but I know that he was married at the time. He may still be, and he has several children with his spouse. So it goes into detail a few specific times that Suzanne actually attempted to leave Barry. On May 11th of 2020, law enforcement interviewed Suzanne's best friend of, I think, like 20 years or longer, Sheila Oliver, via telephone because Sheila still lives back in Indiana where the Morphews are originally from. It's reported that Sheila maintained pretty consistent and constant communication with Suzanne, whether it was over text messaging or on Snapchat, and that this communication did end on May 9th of 2020. Sheila provided law enforcement with a text conversation between her and Suzanne from March 25th of 2020, and I'm going to read that to you guys right now. So Suzanne said, taking care of myself physically in a stressful marriage, redacted, and I had a very tough talk yesterday. She's wary of the tension here. She knows how he is towards me and almost begged me to divorce him. And Sheila said, what does he want? Have you talked any more about splitting? Suzanne said, he threatens, but I've never come out and said I wanted it today. He thinks I'm holding on till after redacted graduates, at least. He probably thinks I'm not strong enough to do it, given finances. Sheila says, he's nuts. Suzanne says, it's Jekyll and Hyde again, ... Pretty much told him I can't be healthy and stay in this. And Sheila says, what did he say? Suzanne replies, he threatens to come home and pack, ... Ugh, he won't speak of divorce, ... Begging for another chance. I'm so torn, but in my heart, I know who he is. Sheila also told law enforcement about the spy pen in this interview, and we'll get back to those in next week's episode because they actually finally let us know what was on that spy pen to a certain extent. But I did go into what the spy pen was and what the intent of it was in part two of my coverage of this case. So next, law enforcement interviewed Melinda, who is Suzanne's sister, on May 19th of 2020. And Melinda had last spoken to Suzanne via a text message on May 8th and had texted Suzanne on Mother's Day, but she never got a response. Melinda referred to Barry as a narcissist, She also said that he lived a double life, was a liar, a bully, an adulterer, and that he craves control, loves money, and treated Suzanne and the girls like they were trophies. Melinda said that Suzanne and Barry often put on a front that they were happy, but that that was not truly the case. And she also mentioned that she found it odd that the girls took a road trip on Mother's Day weekend, especially with the pandemic going on. And this was at like the beginning stages, but quarantine, if I'm remembering correctly, was pretty full on at that point, like in May. So it was still where people were taking it, you know, very seriously, the quarantine in May, I feel like. And so I think that she kind of has a point there. It is a little bit odd to be doing a road trip, but they could have just felt really cooped up because of quarantine. It had been going on since, I believe, February. So they could have just been cooped up. We'll probably never know, you know, what that was about. Anyways, Suzanne had texted Melinda on May 8th saying, quote, "It's hard dealing with the harsh abrasiveness and having to show respect. He's also been abusive emotionally and physically. There's so much, ... I went through a period of acceptance and I feel more angry now. Anger at what I've allowed," end quote. Now, Melinda did not have any context for this message when law enforcement brought it up to her in the interview. She said that prior to receiving that text, Suzanne had not actually discussed any abuse within the marriage, and she was actually really surprised when she read that. Melinda went on to describe just years of Suzanne being pretty much a submissive housewife, is what she called it, to Barry in Indiana, allowing him to control all the finances, and all about Suzanne's longtime suspicions of Barry's affairs. Suzanne had inherited approximately $208,000 from their mother's passing in 2013 and another $217,000 when her grandmother-in-law passed away in 2016. I know that Barry really held finances over her head. She said that Suzanne loved Barry and wanted to be a good wife and mother, and how, in Melinda's opinion, she thought that the move to Colorado was kind of Suzanne's attempt to start over and maybe save their marriage. And when she got a call from their father on May 11th, that's how she found out Suzanne had actually gone missing. She said to herself, quote, "Damn it, damn it, damn it," end quote, because she was certain that Barry had killed her. Then we get into the notes that Suzanne had on her phone detailing abuse from Barry. And those were written on or before May 8th of 2020, but I know that they were backed up on May 8th of 2020, and that was around 7 a.m. And I'm going to read these to you guys. I posted these on my Instagram. I rewrote them out for you. And I'm just going to read them as is. It's not going to make perfect sense because they're obviously notes from Suzanne to herself detailing situations that she was in. So she's not like writing paragraphs by any means. But she wrote, "Monkey app, physical abuse, mental abuse while drinking New Year's Eve, name calling, said I only needed for money, women on Facebook, good for business, lies about deer, pants unzipped, trip to Colorado, pen on hand, wear bear claw, FaceTime in Arizona, angry, stalking Sheila and me in house without telling, lied and said you needed phone to call Casey, chased me around resort and threatened, took phone, not safe alone with you, can't be trusted, oppressive, slams on brakes when angry, threatened to jump out of car, gun, shame and guilt daily for not meeting expectations, nothing to do with infidelity, everything to do with your character and who you are at core. Your lack of control over me equals insecurities equals a sick relationship. Situation with redacted when I'm in / accuse me of going behind your back. Go up and left redacted and me at the table, left plate, no comment, just to watch TV, act like I'm intruding in the garage, verbal abuse, writing checks for cash out of business account, wiring money from INV account without asking or discussing, Monex, In Your Name Only, Pole Redacted In Hurting Her, Left Two Times on Treatment Weeks, Bedroom Profession About Marrying, Having Babies and Sleeping Together, Don't Care About Pregnancy Possibilities, Hot Tub Talking to Self, Accused Me of Boyfriend, and Redacted 5-6, which I think is a date. Wrote in Al-Anon book. Knew I was looking at phone in bonus, So those are the notes. I know they don't make much sense. I wanted to go over them because I, you know, some people can make better sense of those kinds of messages. And they're still interesting. And again, I post those on my Instagram if you guys want to go read through that. But in addition to this, law enforcement found a message in Barry's phone from Suzanne on May 6th of 2020 at 10:13 a.m. saying, quote, "I'm done. I could care less what you're up to and have been for years. We just need to figure this out civilly," end quote. Now, getting into the affair, I mentioned this previously, but it did take law enforcement months to track Jeff down. I know they had audio from him from the spy pen, but only a first name was mentioned on the audio, so that's all they had to go off of was the name Jeff. And Jeff had not come forward after Suzanne's disappearance, so they had to go through a list of every Jeff that was like on Suzanne's social media and like in her iCloud contacts and stuff like that. When they did track down the correct Jeff, he told them that she had gone missing, and he figured, quote, "There's no way she's alive," end quote. He went on to say that he is not proud that he did not come forward, but that he had 6 kids and a wife and would possibly lose his job should his extramarital affairs be made public, so he kept quiet. He said he felt like he didn't have any information to add to the investigation and did not want to hurt anybody. And he went on to explain how their affair started, and he went over all their visits, everything like that, which I already covered in part 2, so I won't go into too much detail on that. He did add, quote, "Here's what she told me about her relationship with Barry. Not good, lots of fights, very argumentative. I feel like it was horrible for her health mentally," end quote. Jeff had previously asked Suzanne if she felt like Barry would hurt her, and he said that she answered, quote, "He would never cross that line. He's learned," end quote, which he took to mean that something had happened at one point or another in the past, but he wasn't sure exactly what that was, only that possibly it had gotten physical. One thing that Jeff also made really clear was that Suzanne had told him on numerous occasions that her intentions of leaving Barry were strictly for herself and her personal happiness and mental health. And she was not leaving Barry to like be with Jeff. And he said that she made that clear several times. So I did want to make a point of that. Jeff was also very cooperative with after law enforcement found him as far as doing interviews and being open and honest about everything. He didn't have anything bad to say about Suzanne. He actually only had really good things to say about her. And he willingly provided consent forms for his DNA, his phone records, and the logins for his social media accounts. Jeff did provide them with an alibi, as I mentioned in part 2, and that was corroborated by his messages, his current work project, as well as credit card charges and bank statements. So he's not a person of interest if anyone was like holding on to that. Now we're at Barry's initial statements. All right, so this is section 3. And most of these statements are going to be between May of 2020 and July of 2020. So first they just go over what Barry told them about the move to Colorado, which was basically that they had been living in Arcadia, Indiana until around 2018 when one of the girls graduated high school and left home to attend college at Western State University, which is in Gunnison, Colorado. So at this point, the family relocated to Colorado to be closer to the daughter. And I read previously also that a big push for the move was that Barry was a big hunter and outdoorsman, and Colorado is kind of the perfect state for all that. And I know that that was the sister of Suzanne, Melinda, that was her impression of why they were moving was so that Barry could be outdoors more and hunt and things like that. Now they went over Barry's business, which he owned a landscaping company. He also worked as a subcontractor for a local general contracting company in the Salida area. He was also a volunteer firefighter for Chaffee County. They also went over the financials with Barry, who basically told them that they just had several joint bank accounts. They went over the couple's normal routines on an average day. And again, you guys can read through this kind of information if you want to like do a super, super deep dive. I will have that linked below. So on May 9th of 2020, Barry says that he worked on a job site in Salida to complete a rock beach property. And after he finished this job, he said he texted Suzanne and they talked about going possibly for a hike and that she had asked him to pick up some chemicals for the hot tub. He stated that his last text from Suzanne was between 11 a.m. and noon, and around 2:26 p.m., he texted her and told her that he was done with this job and he was heading home. Barry stated that at some point on Saturday, Suzanne asked him to take her mountain bike and helmet out of her car, and he did. Barry then stated that he cooked steaks out on the grill and they, quote, never even looked at the clock that night. He added, quote, it's actually one of the best nights we've had in a while, actually, end quote, because there were no chemicals in Suzanne. And I'm assuming he's referring to like her cancer treatments or medications maybe related to that, although I can't be positive. He also added that they had put their phones aside for the night. Barry said that they had dinner together that evening, that they had sex, and they went to bed. Barry said that he could not remember what time they went to bed, but he estimated that it was around 8 p.m. And he also made it clear that neither him nor Suzanne left the house for the rest of the night. Now, Barry stated that he was scheduled to travel to Broomfield on May 10th, which was the next day, a Sunday, to get eyes on the project and fully determine what would be needed. He then stated that Morgan was supposed to travel to Broomfield that evening and Cassidy was due to arrive Monday morning. Now, Morgan and Cassidy were just co-workers or employees of Barry's. And Barry explained that he preloaded his truck on Saturday night and set his alarm for 4:30 a.m. the next day. Barry said that he woke up to his alarm at 4:30. Suzanne was still asleep in the master bed. He said she was snoring. He took a shower and left home around 5 a.m. He then traveled on Highway 50 to Highway 285, then to East 70, north to I-76, and then onto US 36. He stated that he went directly to the Holiday Inn and checked in, went to his room for a short period of time and rested after the drive. And he said after that, he went over to the job site. And after looking at it, he called Morgan and requested that she actually bring another person. He said he was at the job site at 10 o'clock-ish and that it was pretty much back and forth between there and his hotel room. He said he drove to a nearby McDonald's near the job site and cleaned his windshield, then went back to the hotel room and stayed there for about 1 hour and possibly watched television, then returned back to the job site again. Now, when Barry was asked if he ate anything that day, he said, quote, kind of looked for something to eat. And he said he always keeps granola bars in his truck. And then he said, quote, I saw McDonald's pulled in there. I don't like crap food, so I thought I'm not going to eat here. And he added, so I just ended up eating granola bars. So Barry then explained that while he was on the job site, he received a call from his neighbor who explained that they could not reach Suzanne. And I think it's Jean is how you pronounce it. The neighbor has the access codes for the house. And so they asked if they could go check the house. And when they did, they discovered Suzanne's car was at the home, but Suzanne's mountain bike was not. And Barry then told law enforcement that he had texted Suzanne Happy Mother's Day earlier in the day, as had both of his daughters, and that none of them had received a response. He then added again that the cellular service at their home is pretty much non-existent. So the phone would need to be connected to Wi-Fi in order to receive messages, and that maybe that's why Suzanne wasn't responding. And Barry stated he was at the job site when Gene called him around 5 p.m. and that when he left and went to the hotel right after he got that call, he dropped off his tools in the lobby for his staff for when they showed up later. And then he drove directly back to Salida. Now, initially, Barry stated that there were no problems in their marriage, but later on in the interview, he did admit that they fought. And Barry explained that Suzanne had battled through stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma several times in her life, most recently in late 2019, and she was receiving maintenance treatments at the Cancer Center in Salida. He then went on to say that Suzanne had started using Redacted and alcohol, and that this drug and alcohol use would sometimes lead to arguments, and that Suzanne would accuse him of being controlling in these arguments. He described Suzanne's demeanor as, quote, hateful, end quote. And he stated that the last argument they had was on Friday morning, and he denied any physical abuse or altercations between them. Barry then stated that their daughters did not know about Suzanne's substance use and demanded that they, like, not find out about that from law enforcement. He was really clear that he did not want law enforcement, like, questioning them or anything that would lead them to know that their mom had any sort of substance abuse. Or maybe it just wasn't true. Who knows? And he didn't want them getting confirmation that he was lying. But Barry also admitted to actually deleting texts from his cell phone because he did not want their daughters to access his phone for some reason and read those messages. And I know when the girls were questioned that they were asked if they had seen any messages on Barry's or their mom's phone, and both of them said, like, no, I don't go through my parents' phone messages. So I just wanted to note that. Now, it's noted here in the affidavit that Barry changed his last sighting of Suzanne throughout 2020 and 2021 numerous times. It's also noted that every single statement given from Barry about his route to the job site that day of May 10th are later proven false. Also, on April 22nd of 2021, the FBI showed Barry surveillance photos of him actually being in his hotel room and not at the job site when his neighbor Gene had called him at 5 p.m. about Suzanne. So other statements made by Barry in this May 13th interview included, and these are just set aside as kind of like suspicious, so I'm going to read them all to you guys. There's quite a few, so just bear with me. But Barry stated, quote, I just know that there's nothing in my truck. There's nothing in my house. I know that for a fact. Unless somebody came there Sunday morning after I left, that's all. I'm just being honest with you. They can be out there for 10 weeks. They'll never find a single thing, but, end quote. Barry interjected that Cody Cox could be a suspect and that Cox allegedly threatened to kill Barry. Barry consistently throughout the interview questioned why he had not, quote, been cleared, end quote, in the investigation. Barry initially identified the Cushman's, quote, cleaning lady's daughter and boyfriend as possible suspicious persons. Barry stated, quote, because if somebody went in and did something and took her and then ditched her bike to make it look like something, then I want you guys to find that evidence. However, he also states multiple times, there's nothing in the house, nothing in my truck. Barry also stated, quote, and she would get so angry sometimes and even hateful, which is not her. Barry stated during these arguments, Suzanne had stated, I'm going to leave you. I'm going to divorce you. And she doesn't mean it. I know she doesn't mean it, but in that state of mind. And I think they're alluding to him trying to insinuate that maybe Suzanne, like, just left and took off. When asked about working on Sunday, he stated, because it was Mother's Day, obviously, so they're like, why are you working on, you know, Mother's Day on a Sunday? And he stated, quote, it's Mother's Day. It's not like it's husband day, end quote, which is just a really self-absorbed answer. And I'm really not that judgmental about those kinds of things, but that kind of threw me off. That's just a stupid thing to say. He stated that he stayed at the work site with the quote, I think I was there until probably 6, end quote. I think that was later proven to not be true. And in regards to the call or the calls to Jean Ritter, who's the neighbor, he stated, she calls me and says, hey, her car is here. And I said, well, is her bike there? She goes, where does she keep the bike? And I said, well, I pulled it out of her car. It should be right near the car. She goes, there's no bike here. Let me look in the back. And I said, well, she's riding her bike, but I'm a little concerned because I think she said she was going to take a ride, a morning ride, end quote. In regards to inspecting the clothing, Barry stated, quote, yeah, she doesn't ride without a helmet and she has a light blue helmet. Her favorite biking outfit is blue. I haven't been to the house to see if it's there or not, but if the detectives, if you guys didn't find it, then that's probably what she was wearing. Was the blue one missing? Light blue helmet, light blue outfit. She's a matcher. Light blue shirt. But was that at in her closet or did you guys find it? End quote. Regarding the bedding, Barry stated that he observed sheets in the dryer and he stated, quote, was her whole bed, and then it's redacted. And then it says, because I wasn't in redacted's room, was the whole bedding off? Question mark, end quote. Barry was asked to voluntarily submit to a polygraph examination, which he declined, and he said he would think about it. And he said, quote, he didn't want to do anything that wasn't 100% accurate. And he also said they, quote, weren't admissible in court, end quote. That's probably the least suspicious thing to me about Barry, because I personally don't love a polygraph. Agent Cahill observed some scratches on Barry's left upper arm, and Barry stated that they were from a tree when they were hiking in the mountains. And it is noted that these injuries appeared to be healing and several days old. And I don't know what several days old means. I know that from what I've read, my suspicion is that Suzanne went missing on May 9th and not when she was reported missing on May 10th. And this interview was on May 13th. So that could be, I mean, that's a few days. That could be several days. So I don't know what the exact definition of several days is here, but it was noted, so I wanted to put that in. But that is where we're going to leave off for this week. I will be covering the rest of the arrest affidavit next week, where we'll go over the rest of Barry's interviews, the actual evidence that law enforcement has, and much, much more. We will also discuss this woman that is allegedly Barry's girlfriend, who's been popping up in the news the past few days. She was just arrested for trespassing at the Morphew's former home because he sold it. And she was removing a package from the front door. And she is also mentioned in the arrest affidavit. I'm still reading through it. It's like 100 and something pages, but we'll get into that as well. And as usual, my sources for this episode will be listed in the show notes below, as well as all of our social media links. So you can go follow the podcast over there. Thank you so much to everyone tuning in, and a special thank you to everyone who has taken the time out of their day to leave a review or rating on Apple Podcasts. I really appreciate it so much, and it helps this podcast kind of get out there so that new people can discover it. And it makes honestly such a huge difference. You have no idea. I really appreciate it. I will be back next Friday for part 4 of this case. Until then, stay safe and enjoy your weekend.